Thanks very much. I'll hand over to CMS to introduce yourself. I'll hand over to the chair to introduce the team.
Thank you very much. I'm Professor Veriava. I'm the chairperson of council. What I'd like is if my colleague... I think it would be probably easier from where I'm sitting if my colleagues can start introducing themselves, starting off with my deputy chair, Dr. Mpuntsha.
Dr. Loyiso Mpuntsha, deputy chair of council.
I'm Puleni Molefe, manager of communications.
I'm Sipho Kabane, the acting CEN registrar at CMS.
Tembi Paswane, General Manager Complaints Unit.
Dr. Elsevier Kunrari, General Manager Stakeholder Relations.
I'm Del Lucuso, I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Dr. Anton De Villiers, General Manager, Research and Monitoring from CMS.
Deborah Mazia, the General Manager of Financial Supervision.
And Ben Pele, DDG, National Department of Health.
Can we ask the stakeholders, the guests also, to introduce themselves, starting from PMG?
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Oluwole Kemisola. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Tengu Tengela from the Nehao Parliamentary Office.
I'm Len Deacon from RDA. No, thanks very much. Our system, we're trying to gather sound and vision people who can't find them. So we'll use your hard copy your presentation as it is, and then we'll refer to it whoever that is going to be taking us from. I hand over to you, Chair, then you'll indicate who's going to be making a presentation yourself or the acting CEO.
Thank you. I think I'll start off with the chairperson. Chairperson and other committee members, it is my pleasure to provide you with a very short overview of the presentation on the latest annual report of the Council for Medical Schemes for the financial year 2016 to 2017 financial year. It does me proud at the outset that the Auditor General of South Africa provided the Council for Medical Schemes with its 16th unqualified audit report in a row for the manner in which the Council for Medical Schemes managed its financial affairs and complied with the requirements of the Public Finance Management Act and other applicable legislation. The report contains a summary of the Council for Medical Schemes activities and performance, as well as its latest results on the operations of medical schemes in the 2016 financial year. Dr. Sipho Kabane, who's sitting here next to me, Acting Chief Executive and Registrar of the Medical Schemes, will commence the presentations with a focus on the performance of the Council for Medical Schemes and individual units' achievements. Mr. Daniel Lahucho, who is our Chief Financial Officer, will present an extract of the financials of the Council for Medical Schemes, followed by Mrs. Tembi Paswani's presentation on the complaints received during the period that was reviewed. Dr. Anton de Villiers and Mrs. Tiboko Mazia will report on the latest results, the medical scheme's activities. Some notable trends and challenges that are evident will be presented, but I would like to mention a few pointers. The first is a slight increase in the membership of medical schemes. Last year was the first time that the industry had a slight decrease in membership, but the situation has changed and an increase was again evident. The actual what's going to happen in the future with the NHI, where there will be movement of many individuals, probably from the private sector schemes to the NHI, will in fact have quite a strong impact on the medical schemes that are there present. However, managing the change in beneficiary age distribution and the burden of disease and continuous membership growth remain the challenges for the private medical scheme industry. And what is actually happening, the average age of members of the scheme is increasing, and this has an impact on the expenditures that occur. The value proposition of managed care will over time become even more important, and schemes have to ensure that their beneficiaries have the high cost of services. Now this is another major problem, is provided by various health practitioners is one of the factors contributing to the contribution increases. And this is of tremendous concern to us, where the contributions by members is now getting to double digit figures. Going forward, we expect that the discussions on alternative reimbursement models will be initiated, all in an attempt to address the affordability of private health care. There are other aspects or the other issues that raise the cost of healthcare and the amount that individual members have to pay. The high salaries of principal officers, and that's what we mentioned in one of the presentations, and payouts to board of trustee members are a further concern. This clearly shows the need for the continued and strengthened regulation of medical schemes to ensure that beneficiaries remain protected. And the protection of beneficiaries is one of our prime concerns and one of our major obligations. As is evident in the report you have received since 2005, when the CMS started to apply more pressure on medical schemes to reduce their non-healthcare expenditure, there has been a gradual decline in non-healthcare costs in real terms after adjusting for inflation. The Council for Medical Scheme has indicated its intent to further strengthen its efforts in this area. I would like to thank the Council and all the employees of the Council for Medical Schemes for their continued hard work and commit to the Council for Medical Schemes mandate, as it is enshrined in the Medical Schemes Act. I'm now handing over to Dr. Kabani to present the Council for Medical Schemes annual report for 2016 to 2017 to you. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Honorable Chair and members. Given that introduction by Prof, I will simply go to slide number 3, which just basically looks at the organizational structure of the Council for Medical Schemes. We've got about 12 units, 8 of them being the core that does the regulation, and 4 of these right at the bottom there are providing support. This is your CFO's office, human resources, legal, as well as the chief information officer. And then just looking at the goals of the Council for Medical Schemes, there's 4 that we have in the period under reporting. The first one talks to, you know, providing access to good quality medical scheme for members. The second one talks to the CMS being responsible for governing schemes that are registered and ensuring that beneficiaries are informed and protected. The third goal talks to CMS's need to respond to its own internal environment and becoming an effective and efficient organization. And the fourth goal really talks to the strategic advice that CMS provides to the national health policy discussions and the support that we give to National Department of Health. In the next slide, basically this is just the aggregated you know, performance of CMS in the period under review, which is 2016-17, and it's covered in the HUD document between pages 48 and 76 of the annual report. And if you look at those pages, you'll note that the overall achievement for CMS for 2016-17 against the set objective is about 94.4%. This is above the 80% benchmark set by the Auditor General of South Africa. Even though we've got that good performance, we still have challenges. For instance, if you look at sub-program 1.3 and 1.4, which is the ICT knowledge management, as well as the HR unit, they show a negative variance, and we will address that in the coming slides. There's also a partial achievement in programs such as program 2, 4, and 7, and sub-program 1.3. And these will be dealt with in detail as we present by sub-program. This graph just gives an overall picture of the performance of CMS with respect to the sub-programs. And basically, you'll see that there are two bars to this, and that's your sub-program 1.3 and sub-program 1.4. And then you also have partial achievement in sub-program 1.3 and program 2, which is the strategist office, program 4, which is the research and monitoring, as well as program 7, which is the benefit management. The rest of the units either hit or exceed the target that has been set. The chairperson has already highlighted the key findings of the audit report, which is the unqualified opinion on financial statements, as well as on the performance information. And we are indeed proud of this achievement, because it came also with no matters of emphasis. This next slide basically just summarizes some of the key achievements of CMS during the period under review. The first, obviously, is the unqualified report that we've talked about already. But the ICT systems were maintained at 99% uptime during that period. There was also an increase in the prescribed minimum benefit definitions that were published. There was also an increase in our research output to support industry and policy development. We were also able to increase our stakeholder interactions through training, empowerment, and other public initiatives. During the period, we've also increased the number of investigations and governance interventions in those entities that we believed were not complying with the Act. We've also strengthened our appeals processes, and we've made a serious attempt at reducing the backlog on the appeals here. And we've also improved the resolution of complaints during this period under review, and I think this will be touched on in the presentations that are to come. This slide just talks to those two areas or the sub-programs where we said there was basically negative variance. For instance, in the human resources program, there were 5 out of 14 posts that we were not able to fill within the 90-day turnaround that we had set ourselves, and these are basically your scarce and critical skills which we found difficult to recruit. But as an intervention, we've widened our scope, and we're making use of headhunting as well as agencies in our attempt to fill these posts within the required turnaround time. The second issue that created suboptimal performance was in the ICT and KN knowledge management program, where there was a security breach in one of the systems at the office. But subsequent to that, we've taken disciplinary action and we've strengthened our security measures around ICT. The next slide talks to those areas where we believe there was partial achievement, and it's also an area that we want to improve over time. The first one is still in the ICT and knowledge management, where basically the request for information, we couldn't meet the 30-day turnaround time because of the increasing complexity of these requests, and we have now basically realigned our target setting in line with that reality, that it can take more than 30 days. And then in the strategist office, we also struggled with clinical opinions because of human resource constraints. But by the end of that 2016-17, we had reached and cleared all the backlogs. So in a sense, you know, the area has been sorted out through the appointment of the key people that were missing. In the benefits management program, again, in terms of doing rule amendments, we had set ourselves a turnaround time of 14 working days. And then during the time under reporting, there were some rule amendments that couldn't be made around that time because of the complexity and the need to consult, you know, widely before we could approve these. And this is now reflected in the adjusted target for 2017-18. The next slides basically talk to the specific performance per sub-program. And I'll try and go as quickly as possible. The first sub-program is sub-program 1.2, which is the Office of the CFO. In this sub-program, there are three indicators. One basically was to deliver an unqualified opinion on the financial statements. The second one was also to deliver an unqualified opinion on the annual performance information. And the third one was to provide a risk register reports per quarter. And through this period, all of these were achieved in line with the targets. The next slide talks to sub-program 1.3, which is your ICT and knowledge management. In this sub-program, you've got four indicators. The first one being the percentage of uptime for network and servers. The target that was set there was 95%, and we achieved 99.7%. The second one was the percentage of IT security incidents. The target that we had sent was 100, it was zero, and we did indeed have that one incident that I reported. And then the next indicator or objective was to ensure that there's percentage uptime of the installed applications. Our target was 99%, and we achieved 99.7%. And then the last indicator is covered on the next page, and that is basically the percentage of physical requests for information that we report on within 30 days. This is again that area where I said there was underperformance. Our target was 100%, we're able to achieve 98%. The next sub-program is sub-program 1.4, which is human resource management. In this sub-program, we've got five indicators, and these are covered in the next three slides of the presentation. The first page covers the first indicator, which is the minimization of the staff turnover rate, where we had set a target of less than 5%, and we achieved 4.42. The second indicator is the average turnaround for filling vacant posts, and our turnaround times was 90 working days, and as I earlier on indicated, there were 5 out of 14 posts where we could not achieve this. And basically the rest of that page gives a clear indication of the posts where we struggled. And basically this is the CE and registrar post, the senior strategist post, a health economist post, and a senior clinical manager post. And then if you move on to the next page, you will see that the rest of the posts that are detailed there, we were able to fill within the 90-day turnaround time. But right at the last row, there's another indicator there that talks to the achievement of employment equity, and we had set ourselves a target of 85%, and we achieved 91.45%. The next page covers the last two indicators in the sub-program. And the first indicator was the performance agreements being signed by 31st May. And the target was 100%, and we achieved the 100%. The final indicator there was employees, percentage of employees being assessed using these performance agreements. And the target was set at 100%, and this was achieved. The next sub-program is the legal unit, sub-program 1.5. This sub-program has got two indicators, and all of them are reflected on that page. The first one was the percentage of written and verbal legal opinions generated internally and externally. And the target was set at 85%, and the achievement was 100%. The second indicator was the percentage of court and tribunal appearances in legal matters, and we had set ourselves a target of 100%, and that was achieved. This brings us to program 2, which is the strategist's office. This office has got 3 indicators for the year under reporting, and all of them are covered on that very page. The first indicator reflects the number of CMS scripts published in that year and the number of benefit definitions done. The planned target was 14 in total, which is 10 scripts and 4 definitions. And the achievement was 10 scripts were done and published, and 7 definitions were completed and published. The second indicator talks to the percentage of clinical opinions reviewed within 30 days, and we had set ourselves a target of 90%. We only achieved 40, but like I said, by the end of the financial year, we had cleared that backlog. The last indicator talks to the percentage of clinical inquiries done on email or telephone and reviewed within 7 days. We had set ourselves a target of 90%, and we achieved 99%. The next program is program number 3, and basically has got 3 indicators, and these are covered in the next 2 pages of the presentation document. That first page talks to the first indicator, which is the accreditation of brokers within 21 working days, and we had planned to accredit 3,980, and during that period we achieved accreditation for 4,854. On the next page we've got the last 2 indicators. The first on that page talks to the accreditation of managed care organizations within 3 months of application. We had set the target of 26, and we achieved 21. And then on the last indicator, where we talk about the processing of applications for administrators and providing accreditation for them, our target was 15, we achieved 14. And then the next program under the reporting is the research and monitoring. This unit has got three indicators. All of them are covered in that page of the presentation. The first one is the consideration of quarterly reports that we receive from the PCNS. And we set a target of 3 or 4, but we achieved 3 because we only received 3 in that financial year. The others came after that. In the second indicator is the number of research projects that we finalized. The target was 8, and we exceeded that by completing 10 projects. And then the last indicator there is the non-financial report that is provided as part of the annual report, and the target was 1 report, and that was achieved. The next program is Program 5, which is the Stakeholder Relations Unit. This unit has got 4 indicators, and all of them are covered in that page of the presentation. The first one being the percentage of member awareness that came from a survey that was done in that financial year. We had set a target of 30%, and the actual score was 40.3. The second indicator is the number of stakeholder training and awareness sessions that year. We had set the target of 18. We achieved 55. The third one was the publication of the annual report. Target was 1, and 1 was indeed met. And the final indicator for the program is the percentage of positive or neutral feedback received on CMS reputation through media articles, and we monitored that through a tool. We had set a target of 75%, and we achieved 97%. The next program is Program 6, which has got 2 indicators, and both of these are covered on the presentation slide. The first indicator is the percentage of non-compliant cases against regulated entities taken for that year. We planned it 100%, 100% was achieved. And the second indicator was the percentage of governance interventions implemented per year. We had targeted 100%, and that was achieved. The next program is Program 7, which is the Benefit Management Unit. It also has 2 indicators, which are covered on that page of the presentation. The first indicator is the percentage interim rules that are processed within 14 days. And we had set ourselves a target of 100%, and like I earlier on indicated, we're only able to achieve 87%. The second indicator was the percentage of annual rule amendments that were processed before the end of the year. We had set ourselves a target of 100%. By the end of the year, we had only processed 98.9. The next program is the Program 8, which is the Financial Supervision Unit. This unit also has 4 indicators to report on in that year of reporting. And the first indicator was basically a recommendation in respect of Regulation 29, which talks to the solvency and the business plans that are provided. The target was 100%, and that was achieved. The second indicator was recommendations on action plans for schemes with rapidly reducing solvency to ensure that these are sorted out. Unfortunately, during that period, even though we had planned to consider those action plans, and achieve 100%, none of those schemes were actually identified as problematic. The third indicator is the number of quarterly financial return reports. We planned a target of 3, and 3 was achieved. And the final indicator is the number of financial sections prepared for this annual report. And the target was 1, and 1 was reported on. Program number 9, which is our final program, actually has one indicator. Program 9 is about the adjudication of complaints. And the main indicator there is the percentage of complaints adjudicated within the 120 working days turnaround time that we have set ourselves. We plan to achieve at least 76%, and the actual achievement was 84%. This is where my part of the presentation ends, and I think my colleague, the CFO, Mr. Lehucho, will proceed to provide us with the presentation for the annual financial statements for 2016-17. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks very much. Can we request that those that will be coming now just be brief, because the challenge that we have is that tomorrow there is a Pan-African high panel meeting of health in Johannesburg. So most of the members are supposed to be leaving in the next few minutes to catch a flight so that they attend that high panel discussion tomorrow. So if we can just be brief so that at least before they leave, they will have raised certain issues that I usually want to ask, even if we remain behind. And because by the time they leave, we might be remaining with me or alone or two. So that at least they will have raised issues, then you will be able to respond to that. You can just ask them the local just briefly, 2 minutes each.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I think I must just indicate that we have received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General with no matter of emphasis. And I think I wanted to highlight the fact that we have incurred some irregular expenditures, which we needed to explain. But other than that, Chairperson, the nature of our revenue and expenditure are presented in the financial statements and financial performance. I will not take you through all this expenditure, but just to indicate that our main source of revenue, as you're aware, is our levies from medical aid schemes, and we're running a budget of about 135 million, and we always like to compare this with the contributions we receive from medical aid schemes. This year, I think the gross contribution were about 163 billion. So if you compare our revenue or total budget to the industry contribution, you'll see that our budget is very, very minute. In terms of expenditures, our major expenditures are in the area of our personal salaries. It takes about 65% of our total expenditure, as we are a service entity. As I've indicated, our irregular expenditure was incurred because we did not apply a formula correctly. It's not that there had been money not used for purposes of objectives of the entity. The preferential procurement policy requires that for any purchases of between 30,000 and 500,000, you apply an 80-20 formula. That was incorrectly applied. But however, the services and the goods were used for the benefit of the entity. Chairperson, I want to stop there, and maybe the figures will speak for themselves and we'll take questions as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The next, who's doing the next? Thank you.
Good day again, everybody. As we press for time, I'll just rush through, but hope we'll cover all the important topics. There's an outline there which I'll skip because it's part of the presentation, but basically is to sum up number of complaints received resolved and just to go through a number of categories of complaint that we've ranked, but we're only looking at those that we hire in terms of the presentation. Looking at the next slide, it's just the volume of complaints that we received. And then compared to 2015, we've received the percentage of 54 complaints, which the total number as per the annual report, that is the hard copy, the full report that we've received is on page 38. We've received 4,823 complaints. And from these, with those that were rolling over from the previous period, we're able to resolve 4,526 complaints. So in the pie chart that we see on the screen, we classify them into two categories. The first one, which talks to invalid or inquiries, in that instance, we're able to look into 958 complaints, and then the big part of this of the pie was 3,568 complaints, which comprised of 79% of complaints which we classified as valid complaints, which we refer to medical schemes for comments. And then moving to the next slide, what we did there is just to classify the complaints, that is the types of complaints that we receive from members as well as the public. What we looked at there is what is the nature of complaints that we mostly complained about by members. And then in respect of the two categories that we see on the slide, we just broke them into the prescribed minimum benefits account, that is the main category. You see in the last, in the far right of the slide, it depicts the percentages per category of complaints that you receive. You see that there was an increase in respect of all those that appear in that particular slide. I won't be going into examples there in respect of them because the categories is just the summary of what the issues that were before us. This slide is a continuation of the previous slide. Here it talks about the administrative issues that members experience in respect of their complaints with the medical schemes. Some of the benefits were paid incorrectly. There were also delays in issuing pre-authorization to members, and they also complained about general customer service. And there was issues also which talked to medical savings account relating to the clawback that is supposed to be paid by members if they've overutilized medical savings account. Lastly, members complained mostly about the contribution increases because in the last financial year, the industry, most of the medical scheme increased the contributions by double digits, mainly due to the bad claiming experience that the medical schemes experienced. Then we move to differentiation between open medical schemes as well as the restricted. In respect of open medical schemes, the trend which we saw in the previous period repeated itself, as you see that Spectrum and Resolution, Comet and Genesis still appear in the top 10. And you may be aware of the issues that we experienced with Comet. They had solvency issues, but what will happen is that as complaints, we were bombarded with complaints relating to the scheme not paying accounts on time. But ultimately, the CMS made sure that we placed the scheme under curatorship to protect members of Comet, which were later transferred to a safer home, that is Bonita's Medical Fund. Second issue of concern for the office is about Genesis Medical Scheme, which we found that they were non-compliant with the prescribed minimum benefits regulation, where they failed to pay accounts at cost, as per the regulation as well as what the Medical Schemes Act provides. Moving to restricted medical scheme, we didn't see so much trends in respect of this, but just for our purposes, when you're looking at the ninth scheme that appears in the top list, you'll see that it's PAMED, which we've received, it's ranked in that top 10. But what is very important and for us to note is that it doesn't mean that members who of schemes which appear in the top 10 means that there were some adverse findings or issues relating to that. It's just because of the sheer size of those schemes relative to the number of complaints that we receive, because we do a benchmarking, that is per 1,000 beneficiaries, so that we're able to compare apples with apples when it comes to volumes. So in respect of PAMED, we've only received three complaints relating to permit, but the issues, they were not much of concern because they all dealt with the manner in which the medical scheme, that is the administrator rather, paid the accounts of those members. They just paid accounts at scheme rate, where the member wasn't happy about that. And then there were no issues of contravention of the Medical Schemes Act that we found. This is my last slide. I'm just talking about the general observation that we saw in the industry, that they were concerned about members understanding the benefits and the nature of cover that they've bought from their medical schemes. Some don't read material that is relevant because it shows the cover that you've purchased. And then lastly, they belong to medical schemes that do not suit their needs. It could be an issue of cost and looking at affordability. You may want to move to buy a higher option, but find that we will be able to afford it. But schemes are also at fault in certain instances because some of the members have bad experience with medical schemes because of the information that they've received. There's no ongoing training of staff members where they don't give information that is full and adequate. And they also need to simplify the benefits that are offered to members. And lastly, in respect of complaints, the medical schemes need to make sure that they go through each complaint just to go through root and cause analysis so that those issues which were of concern should have been resolved and addressed so that they don't repeat itself in respect of other members. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. Who's next?
Thank you, Chair and members of Council. My presentation, I will focus on membership and utilisation. In the annual report itself, it is pages 128 to 173. The first slide is actually the number of schemes, and one can see that in 2016, we had a total of 82 medical schemes, of whom 60 were restricted and 22 open medical schemes. We noticed also that downward trend. Way back in 2000, we had 144 medical schemes. We expect this consolidation trend to continue in future. The difference between 2015 and 16, that difference of one medical scheme was the amalgamation of Liberty Medical Scheme of Bonitas. So the following slide is membership. We had positive growth from 2015 to 2016 of 0.78%. The end of 2016, we've got a total membership of beneficiaries of 8.88 million beneficiaries in the industry. So if we combine the membership with the number of schemes, one can notice a downward trend in the number of schemes. That is actually not a bad trend. It is good for consolidation and the protection of risk pools. And then the green line is your membership, and we can see the increase in membership around 2006. That was with the introduction of GEMS, the government medical scheme. So if we move on to the average age, the age is always important to monitor, but more specifically, I think one needs to look at the age distribution, and that you can find on page 152 in the annual report. The age distribution, what I mean by that is in your number of beneficiaries for each of the 19 age bands that we work with. So if there's a change, and we've noticed that change, especially in the older age bands, then that put a lot of pressure on the contributions, because people in the older age bands, they claim more, and the cost from age band to age band is not constant. There's significant variation from age band to age band. So it brings me to the healthcare benefits paid. In 2016, a total amount of 151 billion was paid for risk benefits and for savings. That total amount was an increase of 8.87 compared to 2015. If we look at beneficiary, per average beneficiary per annum, it is just over 17,000. And I think that gives you a 1,430, if I remember correct, 1,430 rand per month per beneficiary. That is what members claim from their medical schemes on average. The next section there is just the risk pool, benefits paid of the risk pool, and then from the savings, the total amount of 15.23 billion was paid out of savings for for members, and the increase from 2015 to 16 in the total amount was not that drastic. It was 6.15%. That is probably a result of affordability, where members also make sure that the increases in savings is not that extreme, or there was a change in the choice of benefit option selection. Now, within your risk benefit, you've got your prescribed minimum benefit package. From the risk benefits, 54% was paid for PMBs, and the cost of the PMBs per month per beneficiary was 680 rand. Per month per beneficiary. That's our PMBs. So if we look at the total of the risk benefits paid per discipline, one can see that the hospitals received 41% of all the benefits paid for risk, followed by medicine just over 13%. This is for risk. Figure 9 in the annual report is for the total benefits, where you combine risk and savings. So if you went to a doctor in 2016, I think most of you will agree with me, if you follow your statements, the cost of the GP was around 369 rand. So if the GP sent you to the lab for blood tests, that average amount was 757 rand. And so you can follow the rest and the other disciplines, you will also find in the annual report. So what is happening in the hospitals? I'm just going to look at the average length of stay. If you were admitted for a medical case, the average length of stay was 6.44 days, compared to surgical of 3.79, and maternity delivery approximately 3 days in hospital for a maternity case. So we've got also a project in CMS, as the chair said right in the beginning, the value proposition of managed care is going to be more and more important. Value is measured as a function of quality over cost. The higher the quality, the lower cost, the higher is the value proposition. So we've collected information on most of the chronic conditions this past year on so-called process indicators, but we use to measure a coverage ratio. Now, if you have patients registered on a chronic program, they're supposed to receive the minimum level of care. That is exactly what we measure with the coverage ratios. And you can see for a private medical scheme industry, the coverage ratios, the three that we've listed there, the ratios are reasonably high, around 75%. For most of the other conditions, it is way below the 75%. So HIV is the best managed chronic condition under the PMBs. Healthcare resources, of all healthcare resources, 25% is your GPs, that is active providers that have claimed in 2016. And there's much more detail in the annual report to follow. So to conclude, as the chair said right in the beginning, it is a challenge for American schemes to manage the age distribution burden of disease. Growth is important for them. And then the above inflation increases in the contributions. We've seen that, and it is also a result of people claim more, or the expenditure is way above the CPI. And it is also noticed by the health market inquiry. As you said, value proposition will become more and more important, and we expect more and more discussions in future on alternative reimbursement models. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, members and the chair. I'll go through the financial performance of medical schemes for 2016. That's just an overview of the slides covered. This slide is just a distinction between the CMS reporting period, which is until the end of March of every year, compared to that of schemes, which is up until December. So there'll always be a lag in terms of the reporting cycle. This slide just speaks to the claims and contributions and claims. In 2016, a total of 163.9 billion was collected, and of that, 151.2 billion was spent on claims. So the difference between growth and risk is the exclusion of savings monies. This slide just gives in a nutshell the monies collected and how they were spent. So of the total 147 billion of contributions, 136 was spent on claims, which represents 92% of contributions received, and 9.6 was spent on non-healthcare expenditure. So one can already see that the summation of the two exceeds the contributions increased, which then points out the reliance of medical schemes on investment income. This slide just shows general trends in claim seasonality in the industry. So the earlier months are when claims are high, because this is when members are initially accessing their benefits for the year. In the middle is the winter months, and then a tapering off of claims at the end of the year due to benefits being depleted. This slide just gives an overview of what has happened to non-healthcare over time. This has been adjusted for inflation, so one can clearly see that over the last 17 years or so, since the Act was first introduced, there's been a real reduction in non-healthcare expenditure. But that's not to say that there aren't individual schemes that still have challenges with non-healthcare expenditure. The largest component of non-health is the blue area, which is gross admin expenditure, which includes things like trustee fees, principal officer fees, and other operational costs. This is a comparison of the schemes with the highest PO fees. It's 10 of those schemes. The red line is the size of the scheme beneficiaries. And what one can see is that there's no, not necessarily a direct correlation between size of the scheme and the amount of money that is being paid to the PO. The MSA, the Medical Schemes Act, currently doesn't have a provision for the direct regulation of principal officer fees. Composition of trustee remuneration. Of total monies paid to trustees, the majority is actual fees for meetings attended. That just shows the schemes that have the highest fees paid to their trustees. And the red line is the number of trustees on the boards. So once more, one can see that, for example, FedHealth has 16 board of trustee members, but their fees are not as high as, say, Discovery, which has 9 members. So again, the factors that actually impact on how trustees are remunerated are yet to be further explored. This shows the actual results of medical schemes. So one can see that over the last 3-4 years, there's been a decline in the blue line is the operational results of schemes. So that's the impact of high claims over the last 3 years or so as a result of increased utilization, the aging population, and factors that other factors that were mentioned by Anton. So what has happened is that actually investment income is what boosted schemes to end up with a net surplus of 2.1 billion. So the blue line is just the clean results from operations. Solvency of medical schemes. This is like the trends over the years. So in general, medical schemes are still above the required 25% solvency level as per the Medical Schemes Act. But once more, there are schemes, about 11 or so schemes, that still have solvency challenges. This slide just speaks to investments made by medical schemes. So the primary purpose of a medical scheme is to make sure that they've got enough assets to cater for their liabilities. So most medical schemes have their monies in liquid investments, so cash and near cash. The difference between open and restricted schemes is that because restricted schemes have higher reserves, they have a higher proportion of investments in equity, which is generally riskier and more longer term than other assets. Administrator market share, this is based on the number of lives covered. What has happened in 2016 is that for the first time, MedScheme surpassed Discovery Health. So overall, MedScheme has the largest share in terms of lives administered. But when you split that by open and restricted,
For open scheme, Discovery is the market leader, which has more than 50% of the lives covered. And for restricted schemes, Med scheme is the market leader. And that's as quick as I can go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think those were the presentations that we had worked on.
No, thanks very much. As I've indicated, we're running, we're being squeezed. So I'm not sure whether Honourable Dr. Tembuka, before you leave, you've got any matter to raise so that by the time you leave, at least you will have raised something. And then so that we end with those that are remaining, because only the three of us that will be remaining at the end, because they must just catch their flight, as I've indicated. But before she's still looking at documents, I want to take this opportunity. Thank you, CMS, for the good work, excellent performance in the financial management system, and your targets performance is very much encouraging. We wish you could teach your mother department to do exactly the same, because their performance vis-a-vis their expenditure this year in and year out, there's no correlation. At least for you now, there's a correlation of your expenditure and your performance, and that's very encouraging. Honourable Tumbuka.
Thank you very much. I would also comment and say thank you for the work that was done, especially from the last meeting that we had with you. I've got only two matters that I would like to talk about, as it is reflected on page 3, the CMS organizational structure. You still have the term acting chief executive and registrar, the one that is occupied by Dr. Sipho Gabane. Just to ask, to say, as you have indicated in page 9 of the slides, where you say the program has put in measures to ensure that the filling of vacancies for scarce and critical skills do not take longer than 90 days. So I would also feel like the same, that we end up in the ultimate end cancelling the term acting, and let us remain with the chief executive and register. You know why? The free-spirited way of executing duties. If you know that you are occupying that position as chief executive, it also will say a lot about how you go on executing the duties as it is expected, rather than acting. And the second one is in connection with the members that do not read the booklet, the information. One of the main reasons is the terminology that is used in those booklets. No one would like to embark on reading information whereby you have to Google for the meaning of a term, only to find that even the meaning thereof still remains very difficult for a person to interpret. I think the public, whether they are learned or not learned, would like to read a simplified version so that we know exactly where you belong. And it's true, most of the members are under the impression that you belong to maybe option A. You just take option A out of hasty decisions, only to find that you belong to option B. And you only discover such mistakes when it's time for you to be maybe admitted in hospital, to say you cannot be rendered these services because your option is B instead of A. So my suggestion is, if maybe those information can be written in such a manner that every member can be able to can read and understand the situations thereof. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any take from the two members? Honorable Nkonzo.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will be covered by your closing remarks, because I know you will have a bite on what to communicate to the council. Only safe to ask one or two questions, like updating the update on the process of buying own premises. Are you still listening, or is that something that's been and gone? And another question, maybe the outreach activities in respect of, or as far as the rural areas are concerned. Just comments on this, please. Thank you.
No. Thanks very much. Just to raise one or two issues. One is just to emphasize the point that Honorable Tembogayos was raising, the jargon that is being used. Sometimes it's difficult to understand. And as a result, people end up signing things that they don't know. Is it possible to engage them to just simplify some of this? So that they don't become too much, first legalistic, but second, a jargon that is too medical, which ordinary people find it sometimes difficult to relate with, which then makes them to enter into an argument that they, not necessarily that they've not read, even if they read, they don't understand. Well, there's another, it's something else to read, but it's something else to read and understand what you are reading. You might read something and not understand it. But because you want this, you want to buy this service, then you buy it, regardless that you don't understand what are the implications, and you only learn later. So if there could be a way of simplifying it so that everybody, when it's easy to read and understand, just simply guidelines that enables anybody to understand what is it that they're entering into, or what type of a service they're buying. The issue of litigations, which is very exorbitant. Do you have any plans going forward to mitigate around that, so that you're able to reduce those litigations? Do you have any system in place, and so that you're able to, because from now you should be having an understanding what are the main causes, and then be able to then say how then to sure that we come up with a system that will reduce that at the end. Just to understand the extent to which your PMB package has been revised, taken into consideration or the issue of primary health care. How is it, how have you look into that, to the extent to which it is going to take that into consideration, or it has taken that into consideration. The issue of affordability in relation to medical scheme, especially how is it being regulated? So I take, for example, our own scheme. It's all that expensive.
all very soon. You don't have any role to play around in ensuring affordability. Our scheme is members of parliament, so very. I'm told it's protected, so that's why it's costly and all those things. And we've been debating these things as members of parliament. I'm not sure whether we do have a solution to the problem, and we're compelled by law to be members of that very exorbitant scheme, which is not affordable. And as a result, if you have got more than two dependents, people prefer not even register them because of the cost that they So maybe you'll find now members have registered to themselves and one, but they've got more than they have, but they can't afford it because it's too costly. I remember at some point I was paying 16,000 per month. So it's very costly. It is now it's down because they've grown up. But it's a very expensive system. I'm not sure whether you don't have any role, because I thought you are responsible for all these schemes. Because they've been debating this thing, but you don't have an answer. I'm not sure whether it has been brought to your attention. And do you have a view on that? At CMS on that particular scheme. I remember the EFF wanted to take it to court. I don't know what happened to it. Maybe they realized they're not going to win it because even the judges, they are part of, they are members. So I'm not sure exactly, but it would have been good for you to advise. I'm not sure whether an advice was sought to yourself, because there was a team that was put in place to investigate the matter. I'm not sure whether an advice was sought to yourself, and what advice did you give on this matter. The issue of your outreach, I see that if your target was not very high, is it possible that going forward to just increase your target, especially focusing on the people in the rural areas, so that you just expand to them as well, so that they understand your role and your responsibility? Because many people out there, they don't know that there's a body that exists like yourself. It's not just people out there. Even at some point, until I became a member of this committee, I didn't even know about you. Yes, I didn't know. So if I've got a query, I'll fight with the doctors, with the hospitals, and everybody else, myself, and try to understand the issues. And they will tell me a lot of jargon, and I'll end up giving up. And I'm not sure whether that was right or wrong at the end. I didn't know that the body, like yourself, never. And I'm sure there are men who doesn't. I'm sure there are men who doesn't. So the awareness, you should be able to try and see how best to improve on that, so that you are able to deal with that. Lastly, I see under human resource, there's a significant of resignation. I thought you would just say something about it, as to whether the causes. I see there's a significant people that are resigning. When you do your exit interviews, what's the main reason for individual leaving? Yeah, basically those are the questions. I'll hand over back to you, Chair, and give you an opportunity to respond at least 15 minutes to now and 5 past 6. Thank you.
Maybe I should just start off about the costs of or the rising prices for members, you know, when you get a medical scheme. The first thing is that this is linked to the cost of healthcare. There is a rising cost of healthcare. And there are a number of reasons for that. And I think we've mentioned some of them. Whether it is at the level of the practitioners, whether it's the level of the hospitals, the drugs that are being having to be provided, the new technology that's coming in. So there are a number of these. Clearly, and we need to find ways and means of trying to bring down costs. And that is a very complex issue by itself. For instance, if a person goes to have maybe a hip replacement, we've got a hip problem, instead of having one single price for that hip replacement, there are various different charges for different aspects of it, and that pushes up the cost. So clearly there are those issues. The other is also the age distribution. You can do nothing about that. If people are getting older, they require more health care. And if the average age of members in the scheme is high, the price for membership would also go up because of the higher amount that has to be covered. But also we need to look at the non-healthcare costs. How valid are some of those costs? And we've been looking at that. Then also the issue of payment to or the salaries of principal officers, and that was mentioned. Some of them earn close to maybe 5 million annually. Up to, what's the highest? 9 million. So clearly these are issues that are extremely disturbing. The issue of trustee payment. So there are many of these costs, and the members are in fact having to pay by increasing the tariffs that they have to pay. So clearly this is a problem and we have to look at that. We don't have much to say about it. As to controlling the providers, we can do nothing about that. Particularly the health professionals. And the Health Professional Council has a role in that manner, as well as possibly the South African Medical Association. But it's out of our hands. What we can do is by putting out the figures of the various costs, hoping that that will influence various sectors that could play a role to be a bit more active. So there is hardly any inhibitory mode that would sort of slow down. As then, there was a cost of, there was a one issue that was raised on the purchase of the property. And I think I'd just like to ask our chief financial officer, because we've been into it, we were close to going to buy one, and we then had to stop. Mr. Lahucho.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, Chair, we did undertake a feasibility study to purchase the building, and because we've indicated in the past that we entered into a lease agreement with our the owner of the building with an option to purchase the building for a period of 10 years, which expires in 2023. But the feasibility study that we have undertaken came, the assessors, for example, valued that building at about less than 100 million as an outright purchase, about between 88 and 90 million. But the landlord was asking for an outright purchase of about 147 million. So you can see the difference of about 60 million. we presented this outcome to the council, and I think council said it's unaffordable, it's unaffordable. As I've indicated, you've seen our budget is about 140 million. So it's just not affordable for us to do an outright purchase. So we're locked in this rental agreement up until 2023. But we've also said to the landlord that if circumstances change, we may come into negotiations in that regard. When the market change otherwise, maybe that can come as an opportune time for us to reconsider the purchase. Other than that, the option to purchase immediately has been parked for now due to this expensive and ridiculous amount that the landlord is asking. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair members, for the positive comments. The areas that I just wanted to touch, Prof has already talked to the affordability issue, that basically if you look at it, it's more the tariff as well as the utilization part. And this is where, you know, there's great scope for improvement and control. CMS on an annual basis, before schemes actually come out with their contribution increases, we do publish a document that guides the industry based on the CPI and other, you know, matrices that are out there in the market. And we suggest a tariff, or rather a percentage contribution increase. And then when they apply now for the rules, you know, for the following year, we do look at whether they are sticking to that. Where there are variances, we have an external, you know, extensive discussions with them to find out the reason why they are, you know, moving, you know, at variance with the suggested norm. So this is an ongoing discussion. But I think part of what is particularly a problem for PalMed is the fact that you've got a small pool in terms of risks, because your numbers are not that high. And I think the initiative by the minister of saying moving towards the NHI, we need to consolidate pools, is part of what will assist PalMed in making those contributions affordable, because then there will be cross-subsidization with other pools if indeed you do go the route of consolidating with other schemes. The other area that I just wanted to talk to is, I think it's noted that we need to simplify, you know, the terminology, but I think what also complicates the issue here is the number of options that exist. Currently, I think we've got 331. And part of this whole process of trying to consolidate options as we move towards the NHI and standardize them to a simple number, maybe three, which everybody can understand, that if there are three options in all the schemes across the country and you know the benefits that sit in option A, B and C, then your choice becomes much more rational than in the current situation where schemes compete basically on the basis of the options. I think Elfadi will talk to the outreach program and then what we're trying to do to reach the others. But in terms of the exorbitant litigation, I think CMS is trying all kinds of approaches to reduce this. Firstly, we've noted those schemes that are using member fees to challenge and, you know, take CMS to court. So we're having a close, you know, discussion with them to find alternative dispute resolution mechanisms. And we believe that through better consultation, we can sometimes avoid these things. In terms of the PMB review here, the current PMB review is special in a sense that instead of just trying to repackage the 270 plus 26 conditions that sit in the current package, there's going to be great effort at firstly aligning that package with the NHI package, but also including important features of primary healthcare, maternal and child, and basically looking at the vulnerable groups here. in line with the ministerial mandate of, you know, starting the NHI benefit services through that limited package. So those are the things that we will be looking at. But obviously, the affordability, the sustainability of those PMBs will also be looked at. So all of those factors that make them unaffordable and increase on an annual basis, and also that make people to be excluded from those benefit package, will be looked at to make sure that they are all inclusive. There was an issue also raised around the resignations. I think currently the number of employees at CMS is approximately 120. And if you look and drill down, you'll see that these are highly qualified individuals. You've got chartered accountants, you know, legal people, you've got doctors, you've got health economists, you've got actuaries. And these are rare skills that the private medical fund industry and the administrators are looking for. So given our limited budget, we're not providing good competition for the rest of the industry. So you find that there's a high turnover of these individuals, and we're forever, you know, recruiting and appointing people, and in some instances it's just difficult to retain them. I think Elsabi can maybe talk to the rural.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. First, I would like to point out on page 45 of the annual report, there is a table with a breakdown of the rural areas that we did reach during the period under review. Unfortunately, we are fighting with challenges in terms of limited resources, as well as the fact that we do not have contact details directly of members. So we have to rely to a large extent on mass media to actually communicate with members. And then we also do a lot of road shows that we do visit the various provinces. And last year we managed to visit 7 provinces, and with a breakdown of quite a number of rural areas, and reaching members up to 250 and even 1,200 people at one particular community centre. We also have to rely on the provinces to provide venues for us where we can entertain the members and provide information to them. But we are trying, as I said, with the limited resources. And this year, we also managed for the first time to actually enter the Northern Cape. We struggled to get someone that can assist us in accessing the province. So for the first time, we were able to reach that province as well. And it was such a huge success. I think there were about 1,000 people that we were able to address. So we further worked through unions as well as employer groups to make sure that we can reach as many members of medical schemes as possible.
You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think just to add on to that, the whole issue of rural has other difficult problems. If you look at the distribution of health professionals, and you look at it, it's only Gauteng and the Western Cape that are at the top. The rest, the number of health professionals and specialists and all that in most of the other areas or provinces is very low. And clearly that impacts on the type and level of healthcare. And this is a bigger, broader issue. This is one that is a challenge to us as a country in terms of how do we bring about equity in access to healthcare in all those areas. So that is it. The other, and what I just like to point out is an issue that is very close to my heart, and that is inequity. And I would say that at the present moment, there is a rather unacceptable inequity between health provision and expenditure on health and resources in health between the private sector and the public sector. And this is a fundamental and a big challenge. And we're hoping that through the institution of NHI with its universal coverage, we may be able to overcome this inequity. Because it's, and ultimately you could say that for those that are economically better off, they are all using more resources and more overall money than those that need it most. And the final outcome of this type of inequity also manifests in the poor health outcomes between those that are economically sound and those that economically are in the lower level or the lower strata of economy. And I think I'd just like to put that across because this is a serious challenge to us in this country.
No, thanks very much. Yeah, no, indeed, it is a very serious challenge. We hope that the NHI will begin to gradually address that matter. It's a big problem because beyond that, even if you are a member of the scheme, once you get admitted in a hospital and you have exhausted your share, they chuck you out to send you to the public hospital. You are no more value. You don't have any value because your money is now finished. You only become valueless when you still have your money. Once the money is finished, then you are no more a value. Doesn't matter, then you will have to go to the public and the public must see to finish. So it's one of the biggest problems. So let's cross our fingers that the NHI will come into play, white paper is in place now, and then hoping that very soon the legislation that will come into play. And then we'll then begin a process of making sure that we deal with this question of inequity. If you want to make any closing comments.
Chair, I think just to comment on the issue related to PAMED, it may be useful to investigate how in the short term PAMED can be assimilated into some of the other schemes and options, which I think will be more affordable than what currently is being experienced.
No, thanks very much. I'm sure we're five members. Thank you very much, FEMAS and the chair and your team. Well, there was one matter that I thought you'll answer. I'm not sure whether you've answered it. Dr. Tembewa asked about the process of filling a post of a CEO and a register. We know that you did fill it, and unfortunately, happened what it happened, but it doesn't then give you a space to then leave it open forever. We hope there will be a particular, as you've set yourself a time frame in which you are going to make sure that you fill that position. The sooner the better. No, thanks very much. I'm not going to ask you to comment on it. because we had given you asked and you didn't comment on it. I hope that next time when we come back, it will be a different picture altogether. Because you have got now, between now and May, when we'll be meeting you, I'm sure you will have resolved that matter by then. I don't know where lies the responsibility, because sometimes I would say, no, we've made the recommendation, but the minister didn't agree with us. So I don't know whether it's okay to rest the same, but the minister's got a final say on the matter. And if he does,
then we'll make a follow-up on him as to how far we're in the process, so that at least you are able to make sure that you have that stability that is needed. Now, thanks very much, and we are very sorry for taking this time until very late. It was beyond our control. Thanks very much. Dina served well. Yeah, there's Dina outside that is being served. So everybody's invited. Thanks very much.
Long time no see.